Football Weekly is on the air.
Here's the snap.
Drops back. Throws the ball. The long ball's outfield. Pass is tipped, and it is intercepted. Gallus on late, breaks the tackle. He's still going. 50, 45,
40, 30.
He's going to go all the way.
Runs left to the 20, to the 10, to the 5.
And he strikes into the end zone.
Touchdown!
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 This is Wayne Larravee with Hub Arkish. Welcome to Pro Football Weekly, an in-depth look at professional football this week. Coming up, we've got big games, Seattle-San Francisco and Manning Bowl 3.
How will Ndamukong Suh and his teammates react to the big find? Can the Philadelphia Eagles keep it up on offense? And do we have a quarterback controversy already in Minnesota?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Along with the editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larravee. The Way We Hear It features news and information from around the NFL, and we're joined by USA Today correspondent Arthur Arkish, who covers the NFC North. And the reason Arthur's with us is because there's big news again out of Detroit. Defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh fined $100,000 for an illegal cut block on Minnesota Vikings center John Sullivan late in the first half of last Sunday's game in Detroit. And you got to wonder, guys, will the size of this fine, $100,000, I mean, to quote Barry Goldwater, we're talking about real money now. Will that finally get his attention?
You know, I have my doubts for sure. I mean, Ndamukong Suh is a guy who has been fined now more times than years he's spent in the league. So we did start to see a little bit of an improvement with the personal fouls dropping last season. But, of course, now we're back at square one after the totally egregious hit against John Sullivan. I don't think the fines are going to matter. The suspensions have not made a difference in the past. I think what separates maybe this situation is you're starting to hear Ndamukong Suh's peers speak up. His teammates, of course, weren't really willing to, you know, say a whole lot, but some guys across the league have really voiced their opinion on this, talking about how it's a privilege. Benjamin Watson of the Saints saying it's a privilege to play in this league. Maybe Ndamukong Suh doesn't deserve that privilege if he can't get it right. You've heard even the NFLPA head, DeMaurice, come out and say, you know, we really need to be looking out for each other. So you have to wonder if this is kind of the last straw, if maybe this is what's finally going to get through to Sue, or if we're really just going to see an incredible talent start to be wasted and really starting to hurt his team as much as he's helping it.
Yeah, the really interesting piece here is players around the league is one thing, but when he starts hearing it in his own locker room, and a couple players, not even anonymously anymore, have said, you know, hey, it's not just the 15 yards. It hurts the rhythm of the defense. It makes us all look bad. We've got to be more careful. We've got to play smarter. Those are the things that you have to hope the young man's going to hear. But as Arthur has said, according to him, he's going to keep playing the way he plays. I would like to think that he means aggressively, not dirty. So it will be interesting to see if 100 large gets his attention.
You know, let's stay with the NFC North while we have Arthur with us. And Arthur will join us later on to the program as we take a look at a couple of key games in the NFC North this weekend. But the quarterback questions in Minnesota, Arthur, now, what did you take from that Detroit game? Christian Ponder, 18 of 28 passing, 236 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. And it should be noted that Adrian Peterson, who carried the team last year, his first run for scrimmage, from scrimmage, if I'm not mistaken, went for 78 yards. His next 17 carries netted just 15 yards of rushing offense. And it was obvious Ponder is not capable of carrying that team if AP does not do it himself.
Yeah, Wayne, I had a similar impression. You saw Ponder struggle quite a bit. It was really kind of a Ponder-esque performance in that we saw one or two throws that get you really excited about his prospects and what he can do, you know, both with his arm and legs, but then just way, way too many mistakes. He had four turnovers, which, of course, you're not going to win many games doing that on the road. You didn't see a lot of reasons for encouragement. He continues to look very skittish in the pocket, sees pressure that is often not there and does not react well to it. So, yes, the run game did disappear for him, and obviously he's going to need that at his side, but we can't keep talking about how there's no other weapons either. The Vikings did go out and, you know, signed Greg Jennings. He didn't have much of an impact. Jerome Simpson actually made a couple fantastic grabs in that game. He's got Cordarrelle Patterson now. So it's on Christian Ponder at this point, and it really was not off to a good start in week one.
Well, it was interesting. Les Frazier in his conference call with the Chicago Bears media said, hey, he's not in jeopardy. He's got to play better. We all have to play better. We've got to coach better. We have to do a lot of things better than we did last week. And the beauty of we're at this stage of the season is you get a chance to get back on the horse again, go back to work, and try to improve. And that's what our aim is this week, to be better than we were last week. What I always find interesting about those kind of answers, guys, is that nowhere did Les Frazier say, I won't pull him, I'm looking at Matt Cassel? He said he's not in jeopardy. Well, that can change on one play, on one throw. And everything that I'm hearing out of Minnesota is that Matt Cassel was brought there to be the backup, but also with the very real possibility that if Christian Ponder can't get the job done, Cassel will get a chance to. And so I think that Ponder must be looking over his shoulder at this point, or if not, he should be.
You know, and here's the thing, Hub. You know, you and I have a lot of respect for that Minnesota front office, Rick Spielman, George Patton. We know them. Obviously, Scott Studwell has done a tremendous job with the college development of that team, college scouting over the years. But, in the NFL, it's kind of like an athletic director. An athletic director on a major college program has to get the head coach of the football team right. That's the one decision he has to make right. In the NFL, the one decision you have to make that has consequences far-reaching is quarterback. And if Christian Ponder is not the guy, then they what? Wasted a late first round draft choice on him?
Well, that's interesting. It was actually a high first round draft choice. People were shocked when they reached up and grabbed him. I want to say it was either 12 or 14. And yeah, I mean, that's what Rick's got his name on right now. Now, he's done a nice job in some other areas. It's not as if his job is in jeopardy, Rick Spielman, that is, if Ponder doesn't work out. But you get so much invested in your guy that you tend to go further with him than you should sometimes. And so that'll be interesting to watch as to how hard they're going to hang on to him. And is there, another fair question, is there pressure on Les Frazier from the front office to go further than he thinks he should with Ponder?
Maybe. We'll be back with more Way We Hear It when your current edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly featuring Hub Arkush of HubArkush.com, and we continue with the Way We Hear It. You know, it wouldn't be a Way We Hear It segment, Hub, without a report from the Jets. Published reports from ESPN, that Mark Sanchez is done for the season due to a torn labrum, and surgery apparently is imminent. He is out for the season. Boy, it keeps going from bad to worse for Mark Sanchez.
It really does. In this case, you have to wonder what is next, both for him and the New York Jets. Is this a good thing for Geno Smith and the New York Jets? I really don't know, because now, the pressure is going to be that much greater on him to perform, and there's no distraction. You're not going to hear a groundswell of support for Brady Quinn to get the job. So, it's just not a good situation. Of course, it wasn't a good situation going in. And as far as Sanchez, he's got that big contract extension that he had. He's getting paid. That's not the most important thing, we're told, to many NFL players, but it's certainly not a bad thing. He apparently has said, Sanchez, that is, that he wants to maybe get another opinion. Everybody trusts James Andrews, but just think about what happens if he doesn't have the surgery. Should he let it heal on itself? That could conceivably get him back later in the season. But according to sources, both with the Jets and close to him, that, he's going to come around to the realization that it makes no sense not to have the surgery and to get it over with. And if he has the surgery, he's definitely done until next year. So on one hand, the distraction goes away for Geno Smith and the Jets. On the other hand, pressure is going to be that much greater every single week for Smith to step up and play well. And it won't take long, or it didn't take long, I should say, this week with the New England Patriots going in there this past Thursday night.
Well, Hub, if the Jets need distraction, Tim Tebow's out there. just saying.
Yeah, I got a hunch that may have at least sailed out of New York.
So let's stay in New York. The Giants, problems at running back. David Wilson fumbled twice last week in Dallas. The Giants were very sloppy in that game in Dallas with a lot of turnovers. He found his way into Tom Coughlin's doghouse. Only question is, do they have another dog?
Yeah, well, that's the problem. And this was interesting going into the season. Remember last year, David Wilson, first-round pick out of Virginia Tech, fumbles in the first game and basically ends up on the bench for the first half of the season, but comes back, was so good late in the season, had 701 total yards of offense and 6 touchdowns in their last 4 games, that the Giants were comfortable saying, hey, we drafted him number 1, this is what it's for, he's going to be the franchise. They go into the season with him and not much behind him. They had Andre Brown, who broke his leg in the fourth preseason game. He's done till midseason. So with Darrell Scott and the rookie Michael Cox, there's nowhere else to go. Well, Wilson puts the ball on the ground not once but twice against the Cowboys, and you could argue when you see how the game turned out that it cost him the football game. And I was on the sidelines for Westwood One on that one, Wayne, and I saw Coughlin talking to Wilson after the second fumble. He didn't have a tirade. He wasn't yelling and screaming, but he was pretty firm and pretty disgusted and basically told him to go have a seat. He didn't get back in the game the rest of the night. Well, we've been told this week week that Wilson is still the starter. He's going to get every chance against the Broncos to become the franchise back the Giants want him to be, but he is one fumble away from Siberia. And so you talk about pressure. They're working on it all week in practice. If Wilson puts the ball on the ground one more time, they'll go to Darrell Scott. They'll go to Brandon Jacobs, who they signed this week, because Coughlin's had enough of the fumbles.
Meanwhile, the Texans rallied to beat San Diego last Monday night, but running back Arian Foster, not a happy camper. Tell why.
Well, apparently Ben Tate is going to get a lot more usage as his backup. That is, we're told, to protect Arian Foster. It's interesting in that Tate's been the one who's had a hard time staying healthy. Now, remember, Foster started the preseason on the PUP list and got really active about 2 weeks, I think, for the third preseason game. I don't recall if he played in it or not. I don't think he did. And so this, the opener, I should say, in San Diego, was his first extended action of the year. And he wants the football. He's Arian Foster. He expects to get the ball 25, 28 times. Remember, he scored 17 touchdowns last season. He is probably, you know, one of the top three or four running backs in football. And he's not complaining. It's not a controversy yet. But he is said he's confused. He doesn't understand what the plan is for him, how much he should expect to get the football. And it definitely is going to be a story worth watching as the season goes on.
In Denver, All-Pro linebacker Von Miller continues to make headlines off the field as he serves a six-game suspension from the NFL, latest arrest for speeding and driving without a license.
You know, Wayne, it's one thing to get in trouble. It's not a good thing. But when you are already suspended for six games, to be away from the team and getting into more trouble, this never plays well with an NFL organization. And while the Broncos initially declined comment when the story broke, now John Fox has come out and said, how do you think we feel? We're very unhappy about it. And it's a tricky situation because he's suspended. He's not under the team's purview right now. The league office has already said they can consider adding to the suspension for conduct, the personal conduct code off the field. I don't know that they will do that. I'm not sure they should do that since this offense is unrelated to what he was suspended for. But the puzzle is that Von Miller was thought to be a finished product coming out of Texas A&M, a really mature young man, comes from a good family. He was with his dad when this incident happened, as a matter of fact. So the folks in Denver are very worried. They're telling him, you've got to grow up, son. You've got to focus. You've got to understand the opportunity you have here. You've got to understand everything that comes with it. And any more trouble, and the league office will definitely increase the suspension.
All right. That's the way we hear it for this week. Week two of the NFL. Stay tuned. We've got the games coming up next. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkish. In the NFL this weekend, the Jets and Patriots got things going on Thursday night. As usual, we focus on the Sunday and Monday night games in the NFL this weekend. Let's start with the 1-0 Rams taking on the 0-1 Falcons this weekend in Atlanta. Hub, this game has got a little intrigue to it. I mean, Atlanta, one of the favorites, along with San Francisco and Seattle in the NFC. The Rams, I think, are one of those teams that if they didn't play in the NFC West, I would look for them to make a major step forward. But how are you going to climb over Seattle and San Francisco? Nonetheless, the Rams and the Falcons this weekend, home opener for Atlanta. How big is this for the Falcons after losing on the road at New Orleans a week ago?
Well, I think it's huge for the Falcons, Wayne, because you could almost argue the loss to New Orleans was understandable. There was a ton of emotion with Sean Payton making his return to that ball club. The Falcons don't play well in New Orleans. It's a key division game, and the Saints were on fire. And so you almost give the Falcons a pass on that one. But now, opening at home against, admittedly, a vastly improved Rams team, you got to remember the Falcons' number one seed in the NFC last year, supposed to be the best team in the conference, or at least one of them. They cannot afford a loss here. This would be devastating to them. Now, the Rams really struggled with Arizona in St. Louis last week. Arizona probably a little better than people realize. If the Rams were to get one here, they immediately become a legitimate wild card contender.
Couple of 0-1 clubs get together at Ralph Wilson Stadium in Buffalo as the Carolina Panthers meet the Buffalo Bills. Panthers played Seattle tough, Hub. 12-7 loss last week at home. Didn't get much done offensively. Bills lost to New England 23-21 despite sacking Tom Brady twice, intercepting him, and recovering two fumbles. Rookie quarterback E.J. Manuel, what did you think of his performance? 18-27, 150 yards and two touchdowns.
You know, I like the kid, Wayne, and I think he's going to be a good one. Obviously, the Carolina Panthers have got a good one in Cam Newton. These are two teams to watch later in the season, possibly in coming years. But right now, you know, this is what makes these early season games so tough to call. They both almost beat one of the best teams in the league, but they didn't. Are either one of these teams ready to start winning on a regular basis?
The Miami Dolphins traveled to Indianapolis for a meeting of 1-0 teams. Dolphins won on defense last week, 23-10, over Cleveland. Didn't do a whole lot offensively. Colts were not overwhelming in their tougher-than-expected 21-17 home victory over the lowly Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, the Colts, I think, are going to struggle to win 11 games like they did last year. They've added a bunch of veteran talent to the hall of young people they brought in last year. Probably a better football team, but they didn't play very well at home last week against Oakland. The Dolphins, we knew that they'd struggle on the ground. Had hoped to get a little more out of Ryan Tannehill, but boy, that defense that they've shifted again does look pretty good. It's an interesting one. One of these teams is probably going to be a wild card. Some people think both can, so this is actually a pretty big early season matchup in the AFC.
The world champion Baltimore Ravens have had 10 days to stew on a 49-27 opening week loss at Denver, and this week they're at home for the opener, their opener, as they play host to the 0-1 Cleveland Browns. You know, Hub, the one thing about Baltimore, and I kind of felt this, everybody kept saying, well, they're going to be good, just as good as they were before or whatever. It's going to take time. They've got a lot of new faces in key places on that roster, and it's just going to take a little bit of time. Plus, they ran into that buzzsaw out there in Denver on the opening Thursday night.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. When Peyton Manning throws 7 touchdown passes, you're going to be in trouble. They've got to get better on defense, and Joe Flacco can't keep turning the football over. As far as the Cleveland Browns thought they'd be better, it's probably going to take a little longer with that whole new coaching staff in place, but boy, Brandon Weeden better play better, or they're going to have a quarterback controversy all over again.
A couple of 1-0 clubs collide at Reliant Stadium in Houston for an AFC South matchup between the Tennessee Titans and the Houston Texans. Houston rallied from a 28-7 deficit last Monday night in San Diego with 17 fourth-quarter points for a 31-28 victory, while the Titans put up one of the more dominant defensive performances of Week 1, stifling the Steelers 16-9.
Yeah, don't know what to make of Tennessee, because every year they're a team that surprises us early. They may be much improved on defense. They're going to have to be. I think they'll struggle on offense. Houston is always very good against Chris Johnson, and Chris Johnson got a chance last week with 25 carries but only managed 70 yards, and so you have to wonder if CK2 is going to make it all the way back. The Houston Texans, huge comeback in San Diego, but they got to play better early if they're going to be a legitimate Super Bowl threat.
Two teams playing in a short week. The 0-1 Chargers travel cross-continent to Philadelphia, where the 1-0 Eagles are coming in off a 33-27 victory over the Redskins in Washington. Hub, the Eagles got lucky. RG3 was out there for three quarters, you could tell, shaking off rust. He hadn't taken a hit, hadn't played in a game since his knee surgery last January. And now, he has a big fourth quarter, nearly rallies Washington the win. The Eagles build a 33-7 lead, hang on to win that ball game. San Diego also started strong, but Houston came back to beat them 31-28.
Yeah, and that was kind of the story of the Chargers season last year. New front office, new coaching staff, same problems, although that offense did look pretty good. I think Mike McCoy will have an impact there. As far as Philadelphia, I think it's funny you mentioned short week. Everybody already talking around the league. Can the Eagles keep up the Chip Kelly pace? Well, the short week makes it that much harder. This is going to be a track meet. There's no question about that. The team that plays better defense is going to be the one that has a chance to win this one.
New Orleans Saints were happy to get their head coach Sean Payton back on the sideline, and they played like it, upsetting their arch rivals Atlanta 23-17 in Week 1. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming off a tough loss, a last-second loss to the Jets in New York.
Yeah, there's things I like about this Tampa Bay team, but I think they're still probably an also-ran. New Orleans, on the other hand, Wayne, look at the defensive performance against the Falcons. It's not just that they knocked them off or they got a win at home, but they held the Falcons to 17 points. The defense kept them under control. I expected them to really struggle with Rob Ryan's new defense, but the Saints played it well. If that continues, the Saints are an NFC title possibility.
Two teams looking for their first win, meeting in the Black Hole of the East Bay as the Oakland Raiders take on the Jacksonville Jaguars in Oakland. Jags manage just 2 points against Kansas City in that home opener, Hub.
Call this the Jadavian Clowney Derby because Terrell Pryor did some things in Indianapolis, but not the things an NFL quarterback needs to do. In Jacksonville, they got a long uphill climb with Gus Bradley and that new regime there.
Monday night stage this week, Pittsburgh Steelers coming off a disappointing home opener, falling to Tennessee 16-9, travel to Cincinnati, where the Bengals are coming off a tough road loss to the Bears in Chicago.
Yeah, I think the Steelers have got big problems, Wayne. Usually we see them rebuild on the fly. They're never too bad. I think they're going to struggle all year long. The Bengals have got to bounce back. They played well against Chicago and found a way to lose. If they're a legitimate playoff threat, they've got to find a way to win those games.
Coming up, we start breaking down the big games this week. Weekend on Pro Football Weekly.
is on the air.
We resume with this regular season edition of Pro Football Weekly and welcome USA Today NFC North correspondent Arthur Arkush back to the program. Let's start with, speaking of the NFC North, Detroit at Arizona this week. Arthur, the Lions off a big win over the Vikings, while the Cardinals fell in heartbreak fashion to St. Louis, in St. Louis to the Rams. It's the home opener for the Cardinals. You know, Detroit has had its problems, so well documented in recent years on the road. This is a kind of a moment for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I'll tell you, that week one outcome for Detroit actually shouldn't have it looked as close as it ended up looking. The Lions were putting up yards in bunches, but just couldn't find ways to capitalize. There were some self-inflicted wounds there. But no, this is absolutely a big game for the Lions and Jim Schwartz, who's looking to get off to a positive start, obviously. And for me, the key to this game is going to be that Lions front four. They were extremely disruptive, just fantastic against the Vikings. We all know about the Cardinals' offensive line limitation. So I think for, you know, Bruce Arians' offense, him wanting to get vertical, wants to let Carson Palmer sit back there, I think he's going to have a difficult time doing that because the Lions, as I mentioned, have just been very, very active. That pass rush looks quite potent early in the season.
You know, 0-1 Minnesota Vikings on the road again, travel to Chicago this time to take on the 1-0 Bears. Adrian Peterson, his first carry of the 2013 campaign, 78 yards for a touchdown. The rest of the way, he managed only 15 yards on 17 carries. In Chicago, you have to like the way the Bears rallied to win against a playoff-caliber AFC opponent in the Cincinnati Bengals last week, Hub.
Yeah, you really do. And, you know, I look at this game, and you're always tempted to say, hey, it's just Adrian Peterson. And so far for the Vikings, that's pretty much what it appears like. But Christian Ponder is going to have to show up in order for the Vikings to have a chance against the Bears. The Bears were not dominant in any way against Cincinnati. As a matter of fact, Arthur, they got pushed all over the field for 2.5, almost three quarters. But in the fourth quarter, when they needed to, they did the things to win the game. And there were signs of the new Bears offense that Mark Trestman is promised and that everybody in Chicago is so excited about.
Yeah, there were signs, and I expect an extension of that this week. I'll tell you, where the Vikings really, really fell short last week was slowing down Reggie Bush. Scott Linehan did a fantastic job getting Bush in space where he could be dangerous as both a rusher and receiver. If that sounds exciting for Bears fans, it should, because Matt Forte didn't really get a chance to go off in week one. But I know Mark Trestman is licking his chops at the opportunity to pose some of the same matchup issues for the Vikings with Forte that Bush did last week. So I think they're going to have a chance to be really productive in that area of the game.
Arthur, Kevin Williams went down week three of the preseason with an injury, the massive defensive tackle of the Vikings. He's, I think, really one of the unsung heroes up front for Minnesota. What's his status for this week?
It's looking better. He was a limited participant in practice on Wednesday, but Leslie Frazier said if all things go according to plan, they expect to have Kevin Williams back in the middle of that defense, and what a big difference it'll make. We talked a little bit about Reggie Bush and how much problems he posed both as a rusher and as a receiver. So they will hope to get Kevin Williams back. They got an admirable performance from the rookie Sharif Floyd, who had to play more snaps than he was planning on, but there's no question that Williams is a big difference maker in the middle of that defense.
All right, guys, let's move on. Two divisional champs from a year ago are both 0-1 this season. They meet in Green Bay as the Washington Redskins take on the Green Bay Packers. RG3, you know, here's the thing I take from that Monday night game. He spent three quarters shaking off the rust. He was 15 of 21 passing, 169 yards, in two touchdowns in the fourth quarter of that game. And I think that's the RG3 the Redskins are counting on taking to Green Bay with him, not the RG3 of the first three quarters.
You know, Wayne, I don't think there's any question that there was some shaking off rust involved, but I just wonder if the other part of it isn't this concern and desire that the Redskins have to teach him to play safer. I wonder if they're in his head a little bit and if that's going to cause periods of less than, you know, the dominant player that we saw most times last year. Is he thinking about protecting his knee or protecting his body, or is he going all out to win football games? Arthur, that said, I look at the Redskins' defense and the way it was shredded early by Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles Monday night, and then we saw, you know, what the Packers did on offense against one of the best defenses in the league in San Francisco. You just wonder if RG3 can do enough to keep up with the Packers.
Yeah, I have my doubts for sure. I mean, it was actually that Eagles run game and LeSean McCoy who just went off and really just terrorized the Redskins. But, I wonder about that secondary and particularly that safety tandem. I expect Aaron Rodgers just to feast on the tandem of E.J. Biggers and the rookie Bakari Rambo. I don't think they're going to be prepared for the weapons that the Packers can throw at them. We saw D'Angelo Hall and Josh Wilson struggle a little bit with the Eagles receivers. DeSean Jackson obviously went off. Brent Celek had a big day. I just think the Packers have too many weapons here. If they can find a way to get a little bit of pass rush on defense, make sure they keep some bodies buzzing around RG3, we saw how that impacted them, and I expect the Packers to do all right here.
It certainly will be an interesting matchup in Green Bay this weekend, Washington and the Packers. More breakdowns of NFL games coming up when we continue. We continue with this Week 2 edition of Pro Football Weekly. Along with Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee, and we bring in Eric Edholm of Shutdown Corner at YahooSports.com. Eric, great to have you with us as always. Let's start with the Denver Broncos, the New York Giants, Manning Bowl 3. Eli has beaten Peyton twice in this series. Giants come in off a 36-31 loss at Dallas last Sunday night. Turnovers plagued them in that ballgame. Meanwhile, the Broncos, impressive, pulled away from Baltimore opening night 49-27. Seven touchdown passes and 462 passing yards for Peyton.
Yeah, I think the big question, obviously, for the Giants, what's going on at running back? Can they have better ball security? You know, David Wilson was their first-round pick last year, and he showed some explosive ability in limited time as a rookie. But the issues that plagued him last year, the fumbling, the pass protection stuff, both of them really cropped their head up in that loss on Sunday night to the Cowboys. He missed a block that ended up being a sack from the 1 yard line, knocked him into field goal range, close to a touchdown, and then the two big fumbles, he never saw the field again. And they trust this guy. You know, it's the Broncos defense. It's still shorthanded. I think they could run the ball in theory, but that's going to be sort of the issue number one, I think, coming into this game.
Yeah, it is going to be very interesting, as we discussed in the way we hear it was on the sidelines in that one for Westwood One. Saw Coughlin talking to Wilson, and, you know, Wilson's going to get his chance, but boy, he better show up. I think the better question here is, what does the Giants defense do if Peyton Manning goes off like he did last Thursday night against the Baltimore Ravens? Giants defense was pretty good, really. I mean, they held the Cowboys under 350, I think. They definitely kept him in the game. It was just the turnovers that cost him the football game. But Wayne, so many weapons on that Denver team. It's bad enough you're playing against Peyton Manning, but when you look at all those receivers, you got to wonder who's going to be able to stop that passing game.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting matchup. There's no question about that. And you know, Eric, when you take a look at that game in itself, I think it's a proving ground early season for the Giants to get a win at home and get off on the right foot at the home schedule.
Yeah, starting 0-2, obviously nobody wants to do that. And defensively, as you mentioned, Hub, I mean, pretty good job, all things considered. But they have to be a little bit concerned with the situation with Jason Pierre-Paul. Was pretty much only playing passing downs. Didn't seem to have that explosiveness in his game in week one. Maybe that returns as he gets healthier. And then safety. You know, if they lose one of those guys, they're down to Cooper Taylor, a fifth-round pick, a big kid, but somebody who hasn't had a lot of experience. And, you know, I'm not sure Ryan Mundy is the same kind of player that Stevie Brown was, pushed Brown out for the year. So two good starting cornerbacks, a little bit of question in the depth in the secondary. Can they crank up that pass rush? Because we saw the Ravens get to Peyton early in the first half and just tapered off badly after that.
Meanwhile, the Dallas Cowboys travel to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. Both teams come in at 1-0. Home opener in Kansas City, and this will be quite a scene, guys. The new-look Chiefs coming in off an impressive 28-2 victory. Jamal Charles rushing for 77 yards and a touchdown. Alex Smith passed for two scores. Cowboys revamped defense under Monty Kiffin forced 6 turnovers in that victory over the Giants, Hub.
Yeah, you know, I got a funny feeling about this Chiefs team. I think they're going to be pretty good. I like what Andy Reid did in the opener. Jacksonville obviously is not a great cage here. But, you know, clearly with Alex Smith there at quarterback, this whole offense has a different feel to it. They've had plenty of playmakers on defense and, really excited to see what happens here. Again, I got to look up close and personal to Dallas Cowboys and, Eric, here's the hard part to figure. This is a team that had 16 takeaways on defense all of 2012, gets 6 in the opener against the New York Giants. Is that Monty Kiffin, or is that how bad the New York Giants were?
Yeah, I don't think the Cowboys are going to be on pace for 96 turnovers forced this year. That may be a little bit ambitious, but we did see some guys in the position to make plays. You know, DeMarcus Ware dropping on that first play, kind of spilling out the screen. You know, the safety's getting involved, Barry Church. You know, and it was multiple types of plays, passing plays, forced fumbles, interceptions, that sort of thing. You know, causing Eli Manning to go to his receiver that he didn't want to go to. There were some big plays allowed, but, you know, I'm kind of curious on the other side of the ball, too, what this Chiefs defense can do against the Cowboys offense. Justin Houston, a huge week one. We know what Tom Bahali can do as well. So I don't know, Andy Reid's familiarity with the Cowboys, maybe that gives him a slight edge at home.
And it should be pointed out, in all of these games this weekend, you've got two 1-0 teams in this particular game, but teams that start the season 2-0, since the playoffs expanded to 12 teams in 1990, 63.3% of those teams make the playoffs. Teams that start 0-2 under the same criteria only make the playoffs 11.6% of the time. So it may be early season, and you can't win a Super Bowl or make the playoffs in September, but you sure can help or damage your chances. Stay tuned. We've got the headliner on Pro Football Weekly up next. The headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. The Sunday Night Showcase is our headliner this week. Arguably, the top two teams in the NFC take part in a key early season NFC West battle as the 1-0 San Francisco 49ers travel to CenturyLink Field in Seattle, where the 1-0 Seahawks await. An early barometer at the top of the power chart in the NFL. The Niners, again, when they traveled to the Northwest last year, late in the season, they were hammered by 29 points by Seattle. I expect a much different game this time around, but nonetheless, this will be a great barometer as to where these two teams are.
Yeah, I think it will, Wayne, and some would argue maybe even the two best teams in the league, certainly the two potentially most dominant defenses in the league. Now, we saw, particularly with the 49ers and Colin Kaepernick, that that offense is capable of exploding, and they actually did more of it through the air than they did on the ground, with Kaepernick throwing for over 400 yards. Seattle really struggled last week at Carolina. Now, we knew they would with the early coast-to-coast trip, the time change basically kicking off at what would be 10 a.m. on their body clocks. Russell Wilson actually wasn't bad, threw for 330 yards, but they didn't get their vaunted ground game untracked, and they didn't convert in the red zone, and they only put up 12 points, and that was at Carolina. So, you know, you would think that maybe that's one early arrow indicator that points towards the 49ers.
You know, the two teams offensively, Hub, at times struggled in similar fashion. The Niners could not run the football on Green Bay. Frank Gore coming off six consecutive 1,000-yard rushing seasons, 44 yards on 21 carries, a long gain of 8. And you look at Marshawn Lynch, the bell cow of the Seattle ground game, 17 carries, just 43 yards. Both teams averaged under 3 yards per rushing attempt. And both quarterbacks, as far as explosive plays on the ground, were contained to those games last week.
Right. And you know, this is where you look at these two teams. You say, okay, who's likely to get it fixed more quickly? I think that the 49ers offensive line, you would definitely give a big edge over the Seattle offensive line. Not that the Seattle line is bad, but it's just not as star-studded as good as the 49ers. And then you turn it around, you look at these defenses, and while Seattle is great on defense, a lot of that is against the pass. It's with that great secondary. Right now, they're banged up front. You know, you're waiting for Chris Clemens to be 100% off the ACL. You've got Bruce Irvin, your number one pick last year, is suspended for 3 more games. You know, Cliff Avril, who you brought in to be a difference maker, wasn't in Carolina last week and isn't particularly great against the run. So there's a lot of things, again, that would point towards San Francisco maybe being a little better able to fix it early in the season and in this situation. But, Wayne, the one thing that you can never underestimate or overvalue is that home field advantage that the Seahawks get. They are a different football team in Seattle than they are anywhere on the road, particularly after a trip like that to Carolina last week.
Well, no question about it, Hub. They are so good at CenturyLink Field, and the noise is such a factor in a ball game like that, as the Niners found out a season ago. You know, I think both teams are going to run the football. I think they're going to run it effectively this season. Whether it's this week or not, that remains to be seen. But I think these two quarterbacks, and Hub, they were the triggers last year. I mean, when Pete Carroll gave the offense to Russell Wilson in the second half of the season, Seattle was averaging down the stretch 40-plus points a game. Same thing when Jim Harbaugh went to Colin Kaepernick as his starter week 11 against the Bears. That's when San Francisco really took off and became something special. I still think these quarterbacks control the ultimate destiny of these two teams.
Well, they do, and they both still come with some questions. Kaepernick in his third year, but just really not even a full season under his belt as a starter, and Russell Wilson heading into just his second season. The questions on the two are different. Wilson does have the size liability he has to overcome. It has not been a factor to this stage in his career, but you have to believe that NFL teams spent the offseason saying there's got to be ways to frustrate this guy because of his stature and things that you can do to crowd the pocket and fill his passing lanes. You look at Colin Kaepernick, and I think a lot of people know that he's a freak of an athlete who's probably going to be fine eventually running the football, but will he be an NFL passer? And that's why I think what he did last week against the Packers was so impressive, 412 yards, more than 10 yards per attempt. But again, they always seem to have an answer for each other. Wilson had a career-high 330 yards, and I believe at one point through 10 straight completions. So, to me, I keep coming back to the defenses here. Both sides have got plenty on offense, offensive players who can get the job done. Which one of these defenses is going to be able to step up in a key game and continue to frustrate the other ball club?
San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks, the Sunday night affair, our headliner at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on this early season edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Here with the Publisher's Pen is Hub Arkish.
Wayne, thank you very much. You know, I think we learned a lot of things in week one around the NFL, but a couple things in particular that were fascinating. One, if anybody ever doubted it, yes, all the players watch Monday Night Football. There's much question about that because the outcry that we got from players around the league to the Philadelphia Eagles' new offense under Chip Kelly was fascinating. Players from almost every team felt obligated to comment on it, whether they liked it, whether they didn't, whether they thought it was going to work, whether they think it can work in the NFL. What is the future of it? The Twitterverse was ablaze with players offering comment, and the majority seemed to think it may not last long. And here's what a number of players thought. Jordy Nelson of the Green Bay Packers in particular was commenting that, hey, this is the NFL. It's a much longer season. The players are much better. You have a much shorter roster with just 53 guys. There's no way the Eagles can maintain that over the course of the season. A number of players agreed with him, pointing to the fact that while they did run 50 plays in the first half on offense, an unheard-of total in the NFL, they only ran 27 more in the second half. Other players, however, said, hey, this could be evolutionary stuff. I believe it was Carlos Dansby of the Arizona Cardinals who said, evolve or perish in the National Football League. This much we know for certain. It certainly caught the attention of players around the league, Wayne. I can't wait to see what the Eagles are able to do in week two.
I love it. Evolve or perish. Live free or die. They're going to be on a license plate somewhere. Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Randy Meyer is the producer-engineer of Pro Football Weekly. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larrabee. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.